Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the Sunday Roast. It's the 14th of November, and COP26 has finally come to an end with a slightly underwhelming deal to phase down coal. One important deal, though, in the week saw Powerhouse Energy announce its development partner, Hydrogen Utopia International PLC, sign a framework agreement with Linde Engineering, with CEO Harold Ranker in attendance. Today, we're joined by Alexandra Minkowska and Howard White. How are you both today?
A little tired, fragile.
Been a bit of an eventful week for you guys.
It was incredible. It was exciting. It was basically, to me, it was a dream come true to have a company of this size and of this kind to back up pretty much a startup, which AGY is, having a giant and making a deal with David, this time working together, not competing, right? It is, it's a battle that we are fighting against climate change. I think COP was very much about how big industries, how big companies, huge companies can work together with new companies, you know, find new solutions. There's this whole clock that was made that we have about 9 years, 30 days and a few hours to save the world. And the biggest have to work with the smallest to make it happen. So yes, it was a huge thing.
Yeah, I think just to give some background on Linde, currently a 170 billion euro company, they are actually in the UK, they are a BOC, British Oxygen Company, which they bought, I don't know, 15, 20 years ago. They are the largest hydrogen company in the world. They're the largest gas company in the world. Harold Ranker, who is the MD of Sellersvinder, is first or second largest manufacturer of ethylene plants. So very much involved in plastics, oil and gas infrastructure. They build multi-billion pound infrastructures. And I've known Harold we worked it out just under 10 years. So it's taken me 10 years to get him to actually sign any form of agreement, because Linde do not move into relationships with third-party companies lightly. The one that people in this sector will know will be their investment in ITM. They put in, I think, 20 million when ITM was £140 million company in 2019. They did actually take out, I think, more than that 20 million between 2019 and recently. They put in another 20 million, which took ITM to a £3.1 billion current market valuation. And have that same partner is indeed quite an achievement. Harold Ranker pointed out that they do this very, very rarely, and only with companies which they have a long-term interest in. And with ITM, they have actually a joint venture company, Linde ITM. With us, we're at the starting gate because of our business model, which is that the top company, we be putting subsidiaries in every country. And the subsidiaries will be putting SPVs into operation for each system or cluster of systems, and it will be the SPVs that will be looking to raise the money directly in terms of grants from JTF. Almost all of our focus is on JTF funds, and these funds, we look at 50%, but in certain cases, in certain locations, they go up to 85%. The remaining capital we would look to raise locally, either through ECB loans or investment from partners where we can afford to give a bigger kicker for the percentage they put in. So we will not be coming to the market in HUI on any regular basis. And the fact is that once we get this, the systems going and the revenue streams coming in, these are revenue streams that, after paying the 500,000 euros a year for each system for 20 years to Powerhouse Energy, for Powerhouse, this is fantastic. We are, HUI is a free business development company for Powerhouse and is a very aggressive business development company with the likes of Linda supporting it. But HUI will be taking equity stakes in all of the SPVs. So it also will have an ever-increasing revenue stream based on the number of systems that are out in the field and operating.
So do you want to just tell us a bit more about this exclusive rights that Linda to supply HUI and HUI's DMG technology, particularly in Poland, Hungary and Greece, and a bit more about what actually Linda will be doing?
Right. So Linda signed a framework agreement which allows them to build the DMG system, which is the, first of all, cleanup system, and then later on the hydrogen part, exclusively with us. So every time when we have a plant, we are building a plant, we have to first ask Linda whether they would like to build it for us. So they have the right of the first refusal, which is what they wanted, which is what they asked for, which shows commitment to the system and to HUI, because normally I don't think they would be so keen on exclusivity.
I think the other thing that one should point out is that of a system, the cleanup, compression and extraction of hydrogen, somewhere between 65 and 75% of the whole system. So it is more than, you know, just a component of the system. It is the guts of the system. You know, the front end is the chemical conversion chamber, which is a fairly high-tech piece of equipment. We can say has now gone from design stage into mechanical design stage. So concept stage to mechanical design stage. It's taken a bit longer than they expected, but they are now progressing rapidly and look forward to the manufacturing stage, where we hope there won't be too many delays.
What is interesting, what he said, you know, there was a lot of networking going on. There was, of course, the official part, the signing part, but there was also a lot of networking going on. And I asked Mr. Harald Ranke privately, you know, are you doing deals like that with other companies, right? And he says, oh, sure, we are. There are many small companies, we are doing it, but they never announced it. They're doing it behind the scenes. So he said, I can't tell you names. Nobody knows about it. So this is, they're really proud of it. They're really proud of this collaboration.
Yeah, it's one of the few ones that they have announced publicly. It's a big thing to get them to approve the sort of press that they have allowed us to do and say openly that they're working closely. And the intention is very clear, and this was discussed, that they will look very, very closely at our chemical conversion chamber, Electron, and they will engage with them during the manufacture of the first system. And if all goes to their satisfaction, this will enable them to get much closer to giving an EPC with a wrap in the future. And that's the ultimate goal here, to get Linda to supply the whole system turnkey, put it down and guarantee that it works. That's the end game. There's no commitment there, but that is the end game for them to be able to do that.
So basically, just going back a step, in terms of the sheer magnitude of Linde, you said 187 billion euros?
No, it's 172 billion dollar company. So
it's bigger than Air Products, bigger than Air Liquide.
But not bigger, it's like triple as they are. Every time I look, it's almost like, you know, I used to say 166 billion, now it's 172 billion. Every time I look every week, it has 5 billion more to it. So it is
the largest hydrogen gas company in the world.
The reason why I asked that is, these guys are not going to have signed a deal with you if they don't think the system's going to work.
Exactly. For Linde, it's all about reputation. Yeah. And this is something that was also mentioned behind the scenes. They don't need the money. They have incredible turnover.
What they need is a future engagement in unique hydrogen production systems. They want to remain the hydrogen leaders. And that's why they went with ITM, and that's why they've gone with us. They spent 4 months reviewing their part of the system. They've engaged with our chemical conversion chamber manufacturer, Electron, and they feel comfortable enough to proceed. That they are not doing this because they think this is a jury-built program. They have looked it up and down and have decided to put their name to it.
So they're going to basically be looking at taking the DMG modular system and being a mass producer of it. That's basically what
that is
you
the
see as the future.
That is
so. So it would be like producing the car. You're going to produce a DMG, and someone's going to say, "Yes, I want one of those," and you stick it wherever it needs to go.
I believe that for companies like Linde, this is just my idea of it. That you know, if you are so big, if you are so so big, like Nokia, right? You need to look for technologies of this kind, not to miss the game. Because Nokia, for example, lost the game just because it didn't look into smartphones, into touch screens and all this, and they just collapsed. So they need to look for new solutions.
And also, you have to remember that the DMG system is probably one of the top ESG products in the world. It is not only hydrogen, because the hydrogen is the byproduct. This is the one technology that can truly turn off the plastic tap, which is why Joe Ruxton, the producer of Plastic Ocean, was at the round table. In fact, was the star guest there. Linde, like every other major multinational company, has to start thinking about cleaning up the planet, because otherwise even their profit's not going to save them. So this is a technology that truly fits in with their core business. And gives the benefit of being this Uber ESG by cleaning up plastics that otherwise will end up in the ocean or on landfill. And now everyone is saying about how landfill, it was so good, but now they're finding there's leaching and there's the wind starts blowing plastic off the landfills, especially in the Southeast Asia, where eventually we will get this system. But for now, we're focused on Europe. Our relationship with Linde is for the whole of the European continent. So that includes places like Turkey. It's not limited to the EU. It is the whole of the European continent.
European Economical Area, exactly.
So from the point of view of Hydrogen Utopia, what we're talking about in each particular situation is we're going to create a special purpose vehicle for each unit or for each group of units. And that special purpose vehicle will get the grants, raise the funds, and therefore HUI will not be looking to raise more money. They may need more money for other advancements, if you like, but ultimately each special purpose vehicle is going to be its own financial hub.
Yes, correct. But it's not the SPV that gets the grant. It is the subsidiary that gets the grant or the loan.
You've got to remember that it's a two-stage thing. HUI starts a subsidiary, as we have done in Poland and we have done in Greece already. Those subsidiaries are the ones that can apply for the loans. They are European subsidiaries. We, of course, HUI is a UK company, and I'm sure people have noticed we're no longer in Europe. So only European companies can apply for EU loans. So we own the subsidiaries. The subsidiaries will identify SPVs, and each SPV will have a loan attached to it, applied for by the European subsidiary owned by HUI.
There are possibilities as well that since it's such a flexible system, such a flexible business model, there are possibilities that there will be private investors later on who will just want to buy a plant, right? And then we're just going to take a part of it, of course, as ones who own the subsidiary. But this could be grants, loans, but also private investors. Because I believe that people will need this system desperately. Already in Warsaw, half a year ago, there was a man who wanted to just build it on his own. It was too early stage yet then, but it's not just loans and grants. It's also private investors.
Where we would retain 20-25% of the equity.
As the owner of the technology.
And they'll put up all the money, they'll build it, we'll retain a percentage of the profits.
So as all these SPVs build up, basically what we're looking at is increasing revenue stream model, which I looked at that and it says IRS. So it's going to, you're going to be the IRS. There you go.
Yeah.
Internal Revenue Services. You will continue to generate as the numbers of plants go up, but you're going to continue to generate more and more and more and more revenue. Yeah, it looks like an incredible model in terms of how it can produce money.
Yeah, and this is what differentiates us, I believe, from every other company in this sector that I look at. And I'm sure I miss some, but, you know, the Ceres, the ITMs, the AFCs, the Plug Powers, the Fuel Cell Energies, the Ballards, all of them are one-off suppliers. They build, they supply, they make their profit, and then they expect to expand and sell more 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 and sell more. We also expect to sell more and more and more and more. But in 10 years' time, we're still getting money from the very first one.
You still get to eat the pie every year, even though you've
produced. Sold it.
Yeah.
Sounds amazing. Sounds like I want some of that.
The other thing that's coming up now that we're spending an inordinate amount of time on is the IPO. We're IPOing on Aquis, hopefully at the very end of November of this year, so in 3 or 4 weeks. The implied trading, first trading is the 17th of December. We are confident that there will be quite a lot of interest in this. And as you guys know, you're involved in the fundraising. And so, yeah, people, your people will be coming to you. Other people can go straight to Novum, who are the brokers. They're not looking to sign people up. They'll work through their existing brokers if they want, as Novum will work directly with you. And we are hoping it will be a successful program. What is interesting as a PHE shareholder and as a strategic advisor to Powerhouse is that the announcement on Friday of the HUI deal put 60 million plus pounds on the value of Powerhouse. So if just a deal with HUI is worth 60 million to Powerhouse, we think that whatever price the brokers decide, which will happen later on once they've done some test marketing, it will be a substantial discount to the current 260 million pound value of Powerhouse. You know, who knows what's going to happen this week, because there's been quite a lot of press yesterday, and we will see this as for people in Powerhouse to get involved in the technology less expensively. We hope it will be substantially oversubscribed.
It would be nice to see Powerhouse move up and people, I'm not suggesting they do this, again, it's their decision, but if they took some profits and maybe went into HUI, it's a good exposure.
The good thing is that over the weekend, there was a lot of press, positive press about PAG and HUI. There was Stock to Watch, Top Stock to Watch. Then there was The Express, there was Daily Mail, there was S&P Global writing about pretty much HUI mostly. S&P Global was focused on HUI.
I saw that. I mean, it feels like the market, the machine is really starting to turn now.
Yes. Journalists seem to be very interesting. I think it's all about creating awareness about the DMG system. I think, as I mentioned to one of the journalists, nobody knows about the system. I mean, people just don't, all over the world, some people don't want it, but just people don't know about it. I mean, now I'm traveling to Bulgaria for a new mobility congress or net zero congress to make people aware of this.
The Linde announcement isn't the end. It's not the beginning of the end. As Churchill said, it might just be the end of the beginning. If you look at the news flow over the last few months, you will see all the news flow in PHE has been from Hydrogen Utopia.
Yeah, 100%.
And that will continue.
So we can really look forward to a strong news flow over the coming months as we see the company listing.
Absolutely. And we fully expect, remember, Linde was announced on Friday. We fully expect that the announcement of Linde will bring out from under the woodwork and the stones and everything, people suddenly going, you know, what the f-?
Aleksandra Binskowska and Howard White, thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you, guys.
Have a good time.
Yeah. Enjoy your Sunday roast.
We will.
Well, that was a pretty interesting chat, wasn't it? It was a compelling investment. I can't wait to see when they list. The IPO is obviously very, very, very soon. And you know, heading on to the Aquis market, probably sometime in December at this rate. Anyway, enough of that. How has your week been in general, Kev?
Hopefully slowly recovering. Antibiotics finished and moving on up, still coughing, but hopefully, I ventured out for the first time today. So hopefully that means I'm on the mend. Regarding stock market, well, there's some exciting things happened this week. I think the first part of the week for me was dominated by feedback. The old interview that we did last week with Dr. Tom, I think it was, the Bleeper, and what was the name of the system that stores information?
So they got the Bleeper box, which is the one that is currently being shipped over to India, and it's being installed for the TB screening. Then they've also got Care Locker, which is the NHS.
Care Locker is the thing, yeah. So I mean, when we had that interview last week, I don't know about how you felt, but like it blew my mind how much money these guys could actually make. And yes, not only that boy, the NHS needs this as well.
Like, oh, massively.
It needs it to sort itself out so that, you know, it, as you say, if you're a patient in wherever and then you move somewhere else, wherever, and they can still, you know, connect the dots and understand what you're like. I mean, you would think the system already could do that, but it obviously cannot. And especially as more and more of the care is taken out of the hospitals and more into the community. Wow, the opportunity is just massive. I mean, India, £8 billion a year potential on both Care Locker and doing this tuberculosis check. Because I think the figures were something like 35% of the population in India has dormant TB, which is a bit scary, really, when it's a disease that really doesn't exist in most of the countries now.
Yeah.
So that one blew my mind. Obviously, the stock did very well on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, calmed down a bit Thursday, Friday, I think finished at a penny. But from a 0.7 pence raise, that's pretty impressive. You're looking at, I think, 25, 30 million pound valuation when that IPO is all done and dusted. And with 10 million pounds in cash, or 10.6 million pounds in cash, to me, this is a no-brainer. It really is. They don't need to get even the huge contracts that we're talking about. Even small parts of these contracts is going to make this fly. So that was definitely one of them.
There's a couple of things that came out of that interview. Feedback on feedback is the way I would look. And that was obviously from listeners of the podcast who had no real idea about feedback. And, you know, obviously we brought it to their attention, and quite a lot of people said, oh, you know, it looks like a compelling story, really like the technology, like the fact that it could change lives, you know, in India, screening TB and actually detecting cases and making a difference. And obviously things like Care Locker, it's a great technology to have, something that as we mentioned, the NHS needs a revamp. But one thing that I will say is that the feedback I got on Dr. Tom was brilliant. They said that he speaks excellent. He's coherent. He really understands the technology, and he just seems like a lovely guy. And that's really nice, because we managed to get that story across of what the sort of person he is. Maybe people hadn't really heard him talk before, but the amount of people that said, wow, never, I'm not invested in feedback, but what a fantastic interview that was. And Dr. Tom speaks very well. So yeah, that was the feedback I got on feedback. And I think that it's consolidated well, as you say, around the, you know, to finish around the penny. A lot of these stocks, you think, oh, it's just going to be a pump, and then there's going to be dump. Hasn't really been dumped down. It's just consolidated. Obviously, that none of the placing shares are available yet for people to flip or churn or overhang, because then they have to be voted. You know, the decision has to be voted through at the GM on the 29th of November, and then the shares will hit the market on if they're voted through, which I see no reason why not, on the 30th of November. So it's not a case of people flipping them immediately, because they're just genuinely, nobody's got them. So that putting all that nonsense to bed and dispelling all that, those rumors, that is not the case. Okay. But yeah, I like it a lot. And as I say, I think a lot of people are waking up to the fact that this is a big multi-billion pound industry.
It could be huge. I mean, if we just take any of the examples, it could be huge. The NHS, I mean, even if it was only focused on the veterinary side that he talked about as well, you know, the vet, you're talking about him putting it in a situation where, you know, you can't take the horse to the hospital, like you take the X-ray machine to the horse, and they already have a deal with the equine society in a certain part of the country, I think, if you like, if it becomes a standard, which it sounds like it probably should and may well be. Then all of a sudden you're going to have all veterinary things, maybe not just horses, cows, sheep, whatever needs to be looked at. I don't know what the particular situation is, but so the potential just looks absolutely immense. And I think this company it's almost been like a takeover, because basically what has happened, we've gone into a situation where they've been selling stuff for a long time and been on the market for a long time. Nobody really knew that this change was coming about and has come about. And as Tom said, it's been 11 months that they've been negotiating in India. Yeah. And now they can actually talk about it. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So anyway, less of feedback. The other thing I did this week, which will probably blow some people's minds, is I finally, after that RNS, which was possibly the worst RNS I've seen in a long time, I went back into SYME.
Wow.
I went back
Where's the cheers? I'm gonna have to add on some cheers and whoops and all that, and rocket noises and things.
Because it can't get any worse than this. You've attributed money to this year or to whatever tax year it was, and now you can't, because you've got all your accounting wrong. So now it's got to go into next year. So next year is looking good already. But let's be honest, it's been a train wreck for the last period of time.
Yeah.
So now I've taken a position again. I've basically bought back all the shares that I sold when we talked about this, when I don't remember when it was, but it was what, eight months ago, yeah, when we first started. I still believe in the concept. The concept is, to me, is proved. It's a done deal. It's a case of how can they then now execute this plan? We've been asking Alessandro to come on. So watch this space. Let's hope he listens to this also and comes back on and discusses the reality. Okay, the reality is it hasn't been very good in the last while, but you know, all things can change, and they've got a great potential to make lots of good things happen and lots of money. And the company's bigger now as well. It bought that other company as well. No, so it's I suppose they're the main things that happened to me this week. Can't say I made a huge amount of money this week, but or my portfolio went up. But ultimately, they were decisions I made and decided to go with it. Yeah.
I think the thing is Alessandro went and did a lot of interviews, and he was frequent, and he was getting himself out there, and there was lots of communication. Then obviously they dried up. Now, whether there was a decision made to just reel it in a bit, rein it in a bit, little bit, bring it back in, is fine. But now it's not a case of less is more. I think he needs to really get out there again and start, you know, answering some questions, obviously delivering now. I mean, as you say, the RNS, that it certainly wasn't received very favorably by the market, was it? I think it dropped about 35 to 40% yesterday morning. Obviously it started to recover a little bit today. I think it finished about the 0.185 mark, 8% up today, or 8% up over the last session. Not very good recovery still, and they got a long way. But again, a lot of this remains to be seen. Is you know, will they actually deliver these securitizations? and obviously the company that, that potentially pulled out and were, you know, no longer in that round caused this drop off. But yeah, I'd be glad to have him on. So for me, the shockers this week were really the reaction, or the lack of reaction, was to Bezant Resources and Carers Minerals, but mainly Bezant, because for Bezant, the joint venture news was obviously the bigger deal, wasn't it? It was an 80-20 type JV. So for Bezant, the smaller company in terms of cap, it really should have moved. Now, yes, there was a lot of volume yesterday. Today was much lower, but it seemed like a lot of the buying was done yesterday. They moved it up, you know, but the spreads always remained big. It's always been around the 10-15%. And the volume churn was pretty huge, but it really did not. I think it even finished flat or even like 2-3% down on the day. And for me, on news of a done deal, JV, for three of the licenses, for Truly, Coconut Petra, and Anglicides, it's just like, I can't believe nothing is priced into it in Cyprus.
Yeah, I mean, to say now that those, I think Basanta's worth, what, about 7.5-8 million pounds? Maybe a bit more. To say it's worth £8 million and it's now got that deal with CMRS. And with CMRS, ultimately now this is going to be a no-cost proving up all of the assets on those three licenses, all of the mining assets. Carers should have moved, but they didn't. So why? Why are people basically just saying it's already priced in, or we don't have any values? Is Bezant saying, well, it actually has to raise money to put a plant in place? I don't know, because ultimately, if Jubilee comes on the scene, then Jubilee is probably going to build a plant, and maybe that will reduce what Bezant get, but ultimately, they're going to do it. I mean, for us, it's very personal because we've been there, you know, we've seen it and touched it and realized it, you know, both the copper and the gold. So for us, for me anyway, it was a shock. It was like,
yeah,
okay, this was good news and yet nothing. So, and in Keras, not even any great volume. It wasn't a case of a lot of volume, but it didn't really move. There just wasn't any volume.
It's like the market's become a cynic, hasn't it? It's like, not believe it now, not believing that, not going to believe, not interested, not, you know, speak to the hand. Yeah. But I think there was a bit of really good thread on Twitter this week about market makers, MMs, naked shorting stocks, basically borrowing stock that doesn't even exist, or forward shorting stock. And you know, there's some debate as to whether it's illegal. I'm told on LSE, some of the pundits are saying that it is legal, and the FCA actually allow it. I'm not convinced it is myself. If you do a bit of research, it seems that naked shorting is actually an illegal practice. It certainly is in the US. So really, I wonder whether there is a lot of this going on, because news doesn't seem to be moving it. It may move it a little bit. It's like they move it up and then you get these massive sell pressure, and they drive it down on nothing. And I'm wondering whether during low volume times, the only way these market makers can actually make money when there's no volume to drive the stock up and keep it on a prolonged period is to actually create an element of panic and selling off. And they're shorting the hell out of it, you know. I don't know. It's a little bit of a cynical argument, or you know, it's not a conspiracy theory. It's just the cynic in me says I do certainly. But just looking at the trading patterns and some of the sell volumes versus the buy volumes, you look at the buys are sometimes 3-1, and the stock finishes flat on the day with the volume, and you just think, what is going on with this? This is heavy manipulation. So that I think there's some truth in it, and I'll stick by it that it does happen. I'm certain it does happen on AIM stocks, and it's that's why a lot of people, I think, say I'm not touching AIM with a barge pole. I don't know. What are your thoughts on that? It's controversial.
Yeah, I just don't know that the market is very efficient at the minute. The market's basically been manipulated in some way, shape, or form, because we haven't got a true market really in most stocks. The truest markets we're actually getting is in the new IPOs, which haven't got a lot of historic issues going on with them in terms of the stock and who holds it and so on and so forth. Because then we're getting we seem to be getting more truthful situations, you know, to name any particular, but that certainly seems to be what's happening. But then you could argue Keris isn't that old either, and yet something seems to be happening there as well. What's on your radar screen for next week then? What are you looking at?
So I am looking at, I'm going to actually look a bit more into African Pioneer. I've mentioned it in the past, but again, this is heavily under the radar stock, this one. And then go back, there was an announcement on the 4th of October. And again, it flew under the radar. And that was basically the announcement that there had been a option agreement, a two-year option agreement with the ASX-listed Sandfire Resources. Now, Sandfire Resources are a multi-billion pound company, predominantly in the copper space, and they've just acquired a copper mine in northern Spain. That was, the acquisition was something like 1.2 million euros. So it was a hefty acquisition. So these guys have got a history of pretty large acquisitions of assets. And they basically entered into a two-year option agreement. So AFP entered into this agreement with Sandfire in relation to four of the eight Botswana prospecting licenses. And there was a cash payment of $500,000 US, and they issued 107,000 Sandfire shares thereabout, and a 24-month exploration expenditure commitment of $1 million, okay? So that agreement will basically accelerate the exploration activities on four of these Kalahari Copper Belt prospecting licenses. AFP will retain the other four in there, so it's four out of eight. Funds received there obviously will also allow the company to accelerate exploration activities on the other four of the licenses. So they're going to continue to explore those activities on the four out of the other four out of the eight that they are not included in this option agreement with Sandfire Resources. And also they have projects in Namibia and Zambia as well. So it's not just a one trick pony. So the cash generative, they've got a £2 million cash, and they've got a market cap of 4.8 million or 5 million as near as damn it. So the enterprise value is around £3 million, which, considering that it's got quite a lot of different assets, you know, it's got the Namibia assets, it's got the Zambia assets, and it's also still retained four out of these eight licenses in Botswana as well on the Kalahari Copper Belt. And Sandfire Resources have also got 15% of the company. So they are a significant shareholder. But what it happens is if you drill down on this investment, there's something that Colin Bird has written in, which is this success payment, where if they prove up like 200,000 tons, then they'll get a range of 10 million investment. Then if they prove up 400,000, then they'll get it. It's a sliding scale success payment, and it really does look good. So what it'll do, the option agreement allows an acceleration of the exploration activities on the four out of the eight licenses. And they can then continue to, with the cash injection, to explore the Botswana, Namibia and Zambia licenses. And they're working alongside this 15% shareholder in Sandfire Resources, successful Australian copper and gold producing company with a large copper silver mine developing program in Botswana already, which is could be actually contiguous on this license that extends into the Kalahari Copper Belt. I believe that the cobalt ones are in the Zambia license or the Namibia license. I need to correct me on
no,
that.
No, it's Zambia. It's going across into the border to Congo.
Yeah. So if you want to do a bit of research, you'll find out that Sandfire Resources, as I said, recently acquired. They announced a $1.8 billion acquisition of the Matza copper mine in Spain, which is huge. It's one of the biggest of recent times. So, you know, this is not somebody who's just a tin pot mining company who've not got any previous history of transactions. This is a mid-tier mining company who has got lots of money in their pockets to acquire a very large asset. So, They're obviously interested. They've taken four out of the eight licenses, and as I say, they're already mining, producing in the same Kalahari Copper Belt with their own licenses. So, yeah, it's a compelling investment for me. massively under the radar. They only listed in end of June this year on their main market company. They're not on AIM. So their main market, they've got a cap under 5 mil, 2 million cash, and they're working with a mid-tier mining company who have got a lot of cash. You know, put the stories there. And what I like about it is it's sub 3.5p placing. So you're right, you know, you can buy in at around the 2.5 pence mark. It's certainly one to watch.
It sounds good. I mean, yeah, small cap main market and lots of potential. I mean, I think the highest success payment is 80 million US, I think it is. So 80 million US on that cap would have some significant effect. It would be like 55 million pound payment. Well, my one for next week is really actually a bit of a change from what we normally focus on. And it's a company called Diversified Energy, DEC, D-E-C. I've been watching this now for quite a while, and I have mentioned it just once before, but it seems like it's flying under the radar in terms of what it's doing. It's oil, and it's oil in the US, exclusively in the US. And what they do is they take basically older oil wells, and they basically improve them to create longer life on them and to get more value out of them. And they don't really do a great deal of exploration. So they don't waste money on exploration. If they get exploration licenses, then they tend to sell them off. So they just brought a big package of over $100 million worth, $113 million it was recently. And there was an RNS, I think it was yesterday or today, I'm not sure which, where they've sold off a part of that. And a lot of that was the exploration stuff. So they sold off a lot of the exploration stuff for about, I think it was $35 or $40 million. So now it takes the other thing down to about $80 million or whatever that they got for the increase of their production. But if you do your research, these guys produce huge numbers of barrels of oil. They're gushing cash at the minute, gushing. It's not a small company, £877 million company. Very nice dividend, 10.5% dividend. And has been consistent, paid throughout ups and downs over the last few years, even when oil went negative, which we know it didn't, but you know what I mean. It was very low because they've got such massive volume and such good cash reserves as well. Again, do your research. If you want something that's a little bit less risky and got a dividend, oil, we're going to need oil, whether we like it or not going forward. And all of those small producers dotted all over the US, I think especially in the Midwest, they're basically taking them on when they're starting to slow down, taking them on in bulk, redoing the wells in such a way that increased production, both length of time and how many barrels of oil they're getting every day, improving it, buying them cheaply, and then adding them to their massive portfolio of this. So I see that this has a really good potential to just sit in your portfolio, pay you a very decent dividend. Me, I'm coming up to, you know, wanting to take my pension in a few years' time. So
you're getting old. Basically, you're getting old.
I am. Yeah. I haven't taken a position yet, but it's one of the ones I've got my eye on to take a position in. I also think there's good upside as well. You know, it's £1.03 here. It's been as high as 140, 150, I think. No, 131 in the last year. So I think you could get some reasonable capital upside as well, but 10% a year tax-free in your
ISA. That's a really, really nice dividend.
In your ISA or in your pension will be like sweet, you know. So I have a look at it and see what you think. I'm going to follow it and see what happens. And if some of my other shares go crazy, then hopefully I'll be able to take a position myself. But that's certainly one that I've been watching for a while. And as Phil said, I think African Pioneer's got a good shout. Can't believe Bassant and Keras, to be honest with you, but such is life. And that's about it. What's happening next week? Don't really know. We're at the end of this COP26. Will we keep temperatures from going up more than 1.5 degrees centigrade? Who knows? But one thing I can say to you is that some of the technology that has been on this show today is going to affect whether that target has a chance of being hit, because the hydrogen utopia and changing the world in terms of the plastic, producing syngas and possibly hydrogen or heat or whatever happens to do, is going to have an amazing impact. And these guys could spread all over Europe, US, Far East, and connections. I mean, my potential thinking for hydrogen utopia is just, it's vast. It really, the potential to make a couple of million euros, dollars, pounds on every unit that's produced every year, or that's in production every year, and get rid of all this plastic. Wow, great for the economy and great for the environment, great for the economy, and great for the shareholders.
Yeah, and one thing I will add on that is that, and we touched on it earlier on when Howard and Alexandra were here, is that if you want to take part in the IPO, in the pending or impending IPO, then please email us on admin@thesundayroast.net, and we'll add you to the list, and you can then participate in that IPO. So anyway, on that note, thanks a lot, Kev, and we will catch up in the week.
Yep, thanks a lot, Phil. God bless.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.